Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with this Labor Day weekend celebrations and examine the state of working America with the author of the annual report by that name that is considered the authoritative text on the American workforce. Lawrence Michel, the president of the Economic Policy Institute and principal author of The State of Working America, joins us to discuss his latest report, A Decade of Flat Wages, The Key Barrier to Shared Prosperity and a Rising Middle Class. Then we will speak with Matthew O'Brien, an associate editor at The Atlantic, where he covers business and economics. We will discuss his article at The Atlantic, Who Are the Long-Term Unemployed?, and profile the 4 million people who are the long-term unemployed, Americans who can't find work for 6 months or more, who tend to be more educated but a little older, and can't even get companies to look at their resumes anymore. Then finally, we'll examine the status of women in the labor force with Heidi Hartman, the president of the Washington-based Institute for Women's Policy Research, and discuss the paradox that women are now the primary breadwinners in almost half of America's households, but at the top, in the boardrooms of corporate America, the glass ceiling is firmly intact. And joining us now is Lawrence Michel, who is president of the Economic Policy Institute. He's the principal author of the research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. His latest report is titled A Decade of Flat Wages, The Key Barriers to Shared Prosperity and a Rising Middle Class. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Michel.
Thanks a lot, Ian. Glad to be here again.
And on this Labor Day, Lawrence, Michel, let's start with the middle class itself and the definition of the middle class, and indeed whether, you know, the middle class is what the president seems to claim it is, since he is addressing the middle class and middle class issues all the time. And the more recent reports, excerpts of which were in the AP recently, that indicated that 4 out of 5 Americans experienced poverty and job insecurity and had to go on government programs, indicating that there may be more people in the working class than the middle class. So what's your definition of the middle class?
Well, the economics doesn't define this, and neither does the Census Bureau, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Basically, most Americans think they're in some part of the middle class, those who explicitly don't think they're poor, and those who don't think that they're very rich. And people don't think they're very rich unless they feel that they can spend money without ever thinking about it. And that's very few people. So in the American culture, most everybody seems to be think they're middle class, although it is true that a lot of people will identify in surveys that they are working class, and I think that is actually a rising share.
So what are the politics behind this? Is it more comfortable for the president to refer always to the middle class and not to working Americans? Have we reached a point with the decades of the demonization of working Americans and the very word working, which has connotations of the working class, which then arcs back to the Cold War communism? I mean, in other words, are politicians afraid to talk about the working class and working Americans?
Well, I'm not so sure. I think, the language being adopted these days is talk about the middle class and those who aspire to join the middle class. And, a lot of people will talk about working families and such. As you noted, our book is called The State of Working America. And I think, that does describe, most everybody who's not yet retired.
So in terms of having established the moving line between the working class or the working Americans and the middle class, what's your sense then of what's happened this last week with the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington? And so much of that, of course, was really about a march for people, for justice for all races. And is there a sense that we may eventually start to coalesce in this country, not so much around race, but around class? In other words, do we need affirmative action based upon class as opposed to race?
Well, I believe that, that one has to think about both race, class, and for that matter, gender when thinking about people. In part, it's because of how people think of themselves. And a lot of people view themselves first and foremost through a race and ethnic lens. But I do think that we do have, many, many class issues and all the issues of stagnant wages and rising inequality that, you know, you have covered many times in this show. And I think that we are seeing a coalescing of groups that deal with these issues. In fact, next week in Los Angeles is the convention of the AFL-CIO, and under consideration is a very formal affiliation of the various civil rights groups with the AFL-CIO. And I see that these civil rights groups and the labor groups moving much more in concert together and working together. And in fact, if you went to the march that was commemorating the march 50 years ago, this which would have been a week ago Saturday, it was sponsored by many unions along with civil rights groups. So I do think I do see that these folks are moving together, and I think that's a very good sign.
So would this be the way to revive the labor movement, do you think, Lawrence Michel, is a bottom-up resurgence?
Well, I think it's going to take a lot. Some of it would take change the law, and some of it is about gaining political power. And I think that the way to do that is to build as broad a coalition as you can. And I think that's why there is an interest of labor working together with civil rights groups. I mean, listen, the AFL-CIO has more minority members than any of the civil rights groups themselves, because they're very large organizations, the AFL-CIO unions. So there's a lot of common ground. And I think that it's going to take a lot of a big coalition, and expanding that coalition to be able to have the political presence that's going to change the economic policies that will permit us to have a shared prosperity going forward, because that's clearly something that hasn't been happening. There haven't been hardly any group of workers that have moved ahead in the last 10 years. And the reason why I emphasize 10 years is that it's not just the period after the recession and the financial crisis and the miserably slow recovery that we had. During the last business cycle recovery from 2002 to 2007, we also didn't see any wage growth faster than inflation for workers, whether they be college grads, white-collar workers, blue-collar workers, high school grads. Wages have been dead in the water for a decade for just about everybody.
Again, I'm speaking with Lawrence Michel, who is the president of the Economic Policy Institute. He's the principal author of the research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. And his latest report is titled, A Decade of Flat Wages, the Key Barrier to Shared Prosperity and a Rising Middle Class. So given that we've had this lots decade in wages and on the heels of decades of inadequate wage growth or flat wages, essentially going from basically the end of the 1970s. Is there, do you think, a political awakening going on, or do we have an inherent problem here with our lawmakers and with Washington, in as much as the flow of money is such that money has captured our politics? And do our representatives, do you think, adequately represent the working Americans and the endangered middle class?
Well, I think we have a number of problems. I mean, one is that there is a tremendous power of money in politics, and that helps set what gets voted on, what the agenda is. It helps set what the media talks about, and sets what can pass in terms of legislation. But We have more problems than that. I think our organizations that have constituencies are, like unions, like civil rights groups, like many community organizations, are too small and need to be bigger and stronger. I think that most people have tremendously low expectations, and I don't think we're going to make many progressive advances when people don't believe that much at all is possible. I think at this point, families are hunkered down just hoping that they just survive the current economic crisis. And they're not really expecting to move ahead. They just don't want to fall further behind. They have low expectations for their children. And I think that's really quite remarkable and quite problematic because our economy has created much income and wealth over the last generation. Our economy will produce a lot of income and wealth going forward, and we need to have policy changes to make sure that the vast majority actually benefit from an expanded economy. But if people have such low expectations, I don't think we're going to get there. So I think they need to see some victories. They think they need to see organizations that are mobilizing on their behalf. And I think it'll be very catching that if there is some movement, I think if there are some victories, I think people will rally.
So one of the things, Lawrence Michel, that has exploded in cost since the mid-80s, and we just were talking about earlier how wages have been flat since the late 70s, but in terms of household expenses, the greatest expense that's increased over fivefold is the cost of education and the cost of college. And the president has been trying to deal with that lately on a bus tour, et cetera. But you have these rackets like the for-profit college racket that's soaking up, I think, $50 billion or $60 billion worth of taxpayer money with these frauds like Donald Trump's latest Trump University that's now being investigated. So you have people on Wall Street that are making out like bandits on these fundamentals to the building blocks of a middle-class society, and which the president himself said on his bus tour of the Northeast that this is the gateway into the middle class. So would that be a place to start, to clean up this racket?
Well, there's always room to make people better off by making the things they really need more accessible and cheaper. I mean, that's what the health care reform is about. I thought you were going to bring up health care when you were talking about something that was rising in price. So,
but that's only been rising threefold compared to education that's risen fivefold.
Education has been rising a lot. Maybe not as much as the sticker price, but certainly a lot. And I think we do need to find a way to provide more access to college for more people. I think that's the only way we'll get social mobility, where low-income and working-class families who have children, you know, need to be able to get the most education and training they can in order to have their shot at a good job. I think equally important is making sure that the jobs we have are good. I think the emphasis about college is worthwhile to give everyone a chance, but it's also true that right now one-third of the workforce has a college degree or more, two-thirds don't. Something like that share is going to be the way it's going to be 10 years from now. We need to make sure that people who don't have a college degree also can earn a decent living. And it's also the case that even having a college degree is no big guarantee anymore. As I said, you know, wages for college graduates haven't grown for 10 years. And that's true even for those who are, you know, in management occupations and business occupations, including, you know, people who are in science and technology and engineering occupations. So there is no real guarantee of moving ahead anymore. Having a college degree, you'll end up better off than if you don't, but it doesn't guarantee you a rising standard of living either.
So, of course, our history shows the ebbs and flows of plutocratic control, and then popular movements arise from the original, going back to the original Gilded Age, and then you had the accidental presidency of Teddy Roosevelt, who was a reformer, and then you had the trust busting. So you had, there was a sense that there was more social justice, and then you had the Great Depression that made a slow and painful comeback, where there was more and more social justice, more focus on building a middle class under Roosevelt, reaching its zenith just after World War II with the GI Bill. And at that point, America was, for all intents and purposes, a social democracy like the Europeans. So what happened to that momentum, do you think?
Well, we shouldn't overstate it. There were a lot of people left out of that.
Right, right. But African Americans and Latinos were invisible in those days. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, but I think you know the general trend is what you're saying. And well, I think that there was a counter mobilization in the 1970s by those with the most wealth and power. I think people interested in this should read a book by Jacob Hacker and Frank Pearson called Winner Take All Politics. It lays it out pretty clearly that the business community decided that it wanted to blunt what was the the trend. You know, we were having more civil rights, more rights for women, environmental regulations, more consumer protections, unions were strong. And they were concerned about their level of profitability, and they mobilized against it, both intellectually, through academia and think tanks, on the ground politically, and gradually, gained through political power, made changes in the way we regulate our economy to make sure that those with the most got the biggest share of the pie going forward. And they were very successful. And what's we talked about earlier is one of the things that happened is when you have this vast increase in income inequality, wealth inequality, it also reinforces political inequalities, which makes it that much more difficult to get any kind of political change that will benefit the vast majority. So that's a thumbnail about what happened. But I don't think we should think that it has to be this way. As I pointed out, we do have a democracy. People can vote. People can mobilize. If people recognize that there is a lot of income and wealth being produced, that there's no reason why they shouldn't share in it, that they can implement the policies. They can make it easier for people to join a union and get collective bargaining. We can raise the minimum wage. We can provide sick days to people. We can provide vacation days to people. We can make work-family balance much more easy to navigate. There's lots of things that we can do in this very, very rich country if people have the expectations and they mobilize to make that happen.
Well, finally, Lawrence Michel, on this Labor Day, ironically, it takes a billionaire to one of the richest men in the world to make the point, as Warren Buffett did, that we are in danger of becoming a plantation economy. And where do you see the political leadership coming from? If we have a businessman that's warning us, where is somebody on the political left, do you think, in terms of a community organizer, shall I say?
Well, I think that there are a lot of organizations that are there to challenge the status quo. I mean, the labor movement and MoveOn.org, and there's community organizations in every city. I think the civil rights groups, I think a lot of organizations. So I think that there is a nucleus to build on, and I think it's really important to find ways to energize people and have them mobilize to make changes in their local community, in their state, and ultimately in federal policy.
Well, Lawrence Michel, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Michel, who's the president of the Economic Policy Institute. He is the principal author of the research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. And his latest report is titled A Decade of Flat Wages, The Key Barrier to Shared Prosperity in a Rising Middle Class. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the long-term unemployed.
I share with you.